it is a serious issue, and I think this idea of having it on the agenda is a good idea.
It's already on the agenda, on the program. I just don't know. I don't have a
program. On the work program, yes. Rather than the agenda, the work program. Shall I proceed, Chair?
Yeah, sure.
In this case, I'm presenting as the bearer of good news, which is nice for a change. And what I'm going to talk about is the experience in South Africa and in our experience as an organization, Groundwork, of phasing out mercury in healthcare. Groundwork, and myself in particular, we've been working on mercury.
Sorry, we don't have your presentation. Do we have it?
Regrettably, you don't, Chair.
We don't.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. Do you need to look at it? So just by way of an introduction, Groundwork has been working on mercury in healthcare specifically, working with the healthcare sector for the last 15 years. We, in partnership with a global organization called Healthcare Without Harm, Groundwork, World Health Organization, developed the first mercury partnership with UN Environment. And we have a long history of trying to think about mercury in healthcare, where it is, what it looks like, what the problems are, and how to deal with it. This slide here serves as a baseline. This is a study that was recently done by the CSIR, and it documents mercury in fish, and it gives you an advisory on what is safe to eat and how often. So the first column is your apex predatory fish like swordfish and shark and things like that. The second column is kingklip, yellowfin tuna, Cape salmon. The third is the more kind of common table fish. And then the fourth is specific fish. And what this basically says is that in South Africa, as in the rest of the world, it is only safe to eat fish very, very seldomly, especially predatory fish, because mercury is everywhere. It's everywhere around the world, it's in the environment, and it bioaccumulates, and the way we see it as a baseline globally is in fish. It's ubiquitous. And that's why we have this global treaty, because we live in an age of unilateralism. But even in this age of unilateralism, the world's countries understand and they decided that they cannot control mercury unless they have a global treaty that is globally binding and everybody takes actions, because one country's inaction will undermine another country's action. Specifically, mercury in products ranks fifth in terms of the global releases, about 100 tons.
And can you just go back to that slide?
Yep.
When was this study done?
This study was it's an ongoing study by the CSIR. A scientist at the CSIR called Brent Newman has been collecting fish all over the South African coast, and he's also been measuring persistent organic pollutants and other pollutants in harbors and estuaries and things like that. This particular infographic was developed in 2014, I think it is.
The general awareness in terms of healthy eating, fish is the recommended source of protein. So you say that and kingklip is the most popular one. Okay.
Yeah.
So you say that it must be consumed at least twice. Not more than twice, three times.
Not more than twice per month is the recommendation on this slide.
Per month.
Per month. Because the implication by, and this kind of relates back to the Honourable Purdon's question earlier about whether or not and how exposure is linked to outcome or health impact. The science, the epidemiological science, gives you a direct correlation between exposure and health outcome. So for instance, mercury will impact your neurological system at a certain concentration, and its impact is directly measurable. So for instance, in developing children, in exactly the same way as lead has a direct impact on the development of children and their brains and their IQ, mercury acts in the same way. So what you get with mercury is a population shift in IQ. So you might not see it at the individual level, but at the population level, if you have a population level shift in IQ, it means all these people here will need help, extra help, and they'll never be economically productive. And those people that might have been your geniuses will also shift, and you'll have less really, really bright people in your population. Yeah? But mercury specifically is especially potent to developing fetuses. So if a pregnant mother ate fish that is contaminated with mercury, that mercury will cross the placental barrier, and it will impact the development of that child without question. And the more fish and the more mercury she has, the greater the impact. That is, it is clear. It is not contested science. And Dr. Somerset, who is a scientist at the CSIR, he can answer very specifically.
Is he here?
He's here, yeah.
Okay.
If needs be. Yeah.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit here? Just, yeah, talk to the mic.
As Rico has pointed out, we have done the study along the coast of South Africa, and we've seen that with the measurements that was made in terms of the fish sample that we do have mercury all over in the environment, and with that information collected, we have then populated the information that was done by my former colleague Brendan Newman. And using that information, this is why we now suggest as to this is the amount of fish that we can eat due to the concentration of mercury bioaccumulated in our fish species. I also should just point out...
You know, this is shocking stuff. Eh? I'm telling you, this is shocking stuff. But anyway, let's proceed.
So if you eat sushi, for instance, often, you will in all likelihood be eating some of those fish that fall within those first two columns. Yeah. So coming back to products, globally products, this is from the 2010 snook is lower, I think, yeah. This is the estimate from the 2010 Global Mercury Assessment. It's been revised again. The Global Mercury Assessment was revised between 2016 and 2018. And mercury releases to the environment from consumer products is now in excess of 100 metric tons a year. This is a distribution of mercury emissions per region. The African region is, the sub-Saharan African region is represented by the light green, light blue kind of color, 16.1% of global emissions. Within that, a significant proportion of that is from artisanal small-scale gold mining, where it's very popular in countries like Ghana and Tanzania. But the important take-home message for us as Africans is that we are net importers of mercury-added products. We generally, as a region, do not manufacture mercury-added products. We do not manufacture batteries, lights, relays and switches, etc., thermometers. These are mostly imported products. So that is an important take-home message. This is the language of Article 4, which deals with these mercury-added products. And as Obed and as Zuki have summarized earlier, in Article 4, there's an annex which is called Annex A. Part 1 of Annex A lists those products that are to be banned according to the treaty by 2020, and they include all of these products. They include batteries, switches and relays, cosmetics, pesticides, biocides, topical antiseptics, these non-electronic measuring devices, including barometers, hydrometers, mammometers, and thermometers, and sphygmomanometers, which are blood pressure measuring devices, and they also limit the mercury content of lamps. And when you look at that, you think to yourself, oh my word, will we be able to do this by 2020? And what I'm going to show you now is that we've probably already done it without having to do anything. Because these devices that we use in healthcare are limited by the content of the mercury and whether or not alternatives that are mercury-free are available and whether those alternatives meet the criteria of the WHO in that they are efficient, they are efficacious, they give you the right readings, and that they are cost effective. And if you look at each one independently, the answer to each of those is yes, and the answer to whether or not they are alternatives, mercury-free alternatives on the market already in South Africa, the answer is yes, they are already. So the World Health Organization is the driver of phasing out mercury in healthcare specifically. When a thermometer with mercury breaks in a hospital, it means you have to spend a lot of money cleaning it up. Because if you don't clean it up, that mercury, which exists in that kind of liquid state, it is constantly vaporizing. And people will breathe in that mercury. So mercury is a significant occupational health risk. It is a significant risk to patients. So WHO very early on recognized the risk of mercury in healthcare, even though mercury was considered a gold standard for a long time. And it made a policy decision based on a guidance document that it published. And this is that guidance document. It's called Towards the Tipping Point. And basically what it does is it looks at where mercury is found in a hospital, in a healthcare unit, what are the replacements, whether those replacements are available, cost-effective, efficacious, etc. So there are mercury-free batteries. These are batteries that are less than 2% mercury content. There are mercury-free switches and relays, and there are examples of those. There are mercury in cosmetics is banned. This is another significant problem in the global south. These are mainly skin lightening creams. This is used by populations in Asia, in Africa, and in Latin America. And the mercury basically inhibits the pigment in your skin, and it lightens the skin. Now, a lot of these products are illegal. They are reformulated, so people will take the creams and add mercury to them. When Mark and I were in Geneva last year for the first conference of the parties, I knew that some of my colleagues had bought a machine called an XRF. It's a machine that can scan a product and tell you what the mercury content of it is. I was in Phoenix, and I knew that skin lightening creams are very popular in the Indian community in Phoenix. I bought a sample, and I took it with me to Geneva, and the mercury content was 9,800 parts per million. WH guidance says less than one part per million can be harmful to your health. So that is the scale of the problem. But these are used all over. The illegal trade in these skin creams is rife in Africa. Many people will have come across them from street vendors, etc. But again, what ratification of the convention does is it gives us a little bit more control in this regard.
Yeah, the skin lightening products are very popular in the country. I think in the past few years, it has been very popular, you know. Even amongst those who are, among the celebrities, people who you think that they would have a certain level of knowledge about what is dangerous, what is not dangerous.
Yeah.
But people are using this thing. Yeah. Many examples in the celebrity world, people are using the skin lightening products.
So just to be clear, these are already banned in South Africa. Our Department of Health, National Department of Health, has a national standard, and it restricts the use of mercury in cosmetics. So we've already taken that legislative step. So we've already done that. So biocides, pesticides, topical antiseptics, and paints containing mercury, again, these are already banned in our country. There is already regulations that ban the use of mercury-added pesticides, biocides, and topical antiseptics. These are other examples just of mercury-free measuring devices. These are the non electronic ones, so digital thermometers, blood pressure measuring devices, air pressure devices. All of these are available, and they give you an equivalent reading. As far as lighting is concerned, inadvertently, we already meet the requirements of the convention because we import these lamps. We import them from Europe mainly. In Europe, they have to meet the ROS standards, and the ROS standards already limit the amount of mercury in them. So that's also, that base is also covered. We do use CFLs. CFLs do contain a little bit of mercury. There are some that contain mercury above the limit that the convention would limit, which is 5 milligrams. But already the transition from CFLs to LEDs is already happening, and as a market mechanism, inadvertently, we will begin to meet that just purely from a market mechanism. But to adjust our import standards to limit the mercury in CFLs to below a certain threshold would be a very easy thing for us to do. In dentistry, the requirement of the convention is not very strong. It gives, in Annex B of Article 4, it gives a basket of actions, and countries are obliged to choose one or two. So, for example, one example is an awareness-raising campaign, or you should encourage insurance schemes not to refund mercury amalgam, rather they should refund mercury-free amalgam. So they're very soft requirements in the convention, and I would say that we already meet this requirement in dentistry. What do dentists say? Again, dentists don't want to use mercury in their dental clinics because for them it's an occupational health risk. When you use mercury in teeth, you're generally deteriorating the tooth because you have to dig out a whole lot more because the mercury amalgam has to clamp around the tooth. So dentists generally don't want to use mercury. And if we look in South Africa, the survey that we did, the private dentists, where middle-class people are going, they, for purely cosmetic reasons, are just about all mercury-free. It is only the public health hospitals that are still using mercury amalgam. To retrain those dentists and to put in place measures so that dental schools only practice mercury-free dentistry would be quite an easy thing to do. It would not be a difficult thing to do. So we can make this transition quite quickly and quite easily. This is the global partnership, the WHO partnership that we're talking about. This was its goal by 2017 to phase out 70% of mercury and shift production globally. In China and India, where thermometers and sphygs are being manufactured, they are already shifting anyway. They are making the adjustment. Thermometers and sphygs do not get manufactured anywhere other than China and India. There are guidance documents on how to do this. The most recent guidance document is something that we work with WHO. It is a step-by-step guide on phasing out mercury-containing thermometers and sphygs in healthcare. It is literally a how-to-do thing. So for those countries that still haven't done this and are still wanting to do this, there is a WHO guidance document that helps you do it, and it has these steps. I showed you this a little bit earlier. This is a directive from the Department of Health in KZN. This dates back to 2006. And in 2006, the KZN Department of Health had a procurement directive to phase out mercury in healthcare based on the occupational health risks, based on the risks to patients, based on the environmental risks. Life Healthcare, we organized an ongoing series of workshops with the healthcare sector. They took a policy directive to phase out mercury in all of their hospitals. So they don't have mercury in any of their lighting, and they don't have mercury in any of their hospitals. Netcare. This is Life Healthcare. Life Healthcare did it by 2011, and they also phased out thermometers and blood pressure measuring devices. And in the Western Cape, all of the big hospitals, including Groote Schuur and Tygerberg hospitals, and all of the private hospitals, have phased out mercury in healthcare. The only pockets where mercury exists in healthcare is in small clinics and some hospitals. And these are usually the poorer resourced hospitals in South Africa, mainly in rural districts, and it's mainly those healthcare workers who generally have to procure their own equipment. They have to buy their own thermometer because they use it on their rounds. Thermometer breakages are very common, especially in child units, because imagine you're doing this every time you're recalibrating your thermometer, you're trying to stick it into a child's mouth, a baby's mouth that's crying, or under the arm, and the breakages are very common. When that happens in a pediatric unit, you're on a hiding to nothing, because generally those poorly resourced hospitals and those clinics don't have proper cleanup kits. The staff aren't aware of the risks. They don't have guidance documents. The mercury in those healthcare facilities will expose the workers and the patients. So the way to replace them, which is quite easy, is to have a national exchange. And you do it in one go. You have a national procurement policy, national exchange, you swap a thermometer for a digital thermometer, and you get rid of mercury quite easily. And that is just about the end of my good news story. This is what's happening globally. So there is a national policy in the Philippines to phase out mercury in healthcare, Argentina, Chile, Mongolia. In process, we've got India, South Africa, Costa Rica, others, because there's been significant progress. Cities like Buenos Aires, Sao Paulo, Mexico City, Delhi have also phased it out, as well as some of the other examples I've presented. And there are a whole lot of resources on how to do this and how to go about dealing with mercury in products and in healthcare. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that was very informative, well presented, opened our eyes, especially around fish. I like Hintlip, I must confess. So I don't know what am I going to do now, or what it might have done, you know. You'll never know. But this requires also a lot of education, because Most people are not aware of this. So we are going to run away from fish now. It's now a mercury. Not earlier on, but also in previous presentations, we were told that the fish eats this plastic, and then the microbeads, you end up eating these microbeads in the fish product. So I don't know what is the safe alternative now. Chicken. Chickens, there are lots of chickens from Brazil, from the US that gets dumped into our market. Maybe one will stick with game, you know, the game meat. But thank you very much. I see members don't have a lot of questions. That was very informative. It's a good thing that Groundwork is also supporting the adoption of the Minamata Convention on Mercury, and is not very critical of it, because I know that most of the time you are very critical of government policy, especially around air quality and to some extent climate change issues. Honorable Makubele has got comment.
Just one question. I can't remember, perhaps you'll refresh us. In SADC, which other countries have actually ratified? I'm not saying they must lead us necessarily. I'm just saying.
No, they mentioned the countries. They mentioned the countries on the first presentation. Yeah, it's in the document, the first one, the first presentation. So the process will be on Thursday. On Thursday, we will consider this next week, the possible adoption by National Assembly. So from National Assembly, it will go to the NCOP. And from NCOP, then South Africa can submit instruments of ratification with the, I don't know, they've got a secretariat or what's happening under this convention. And then it will be approved. The only thing that will then remain is for us to deal with industry. To get it to be online. But given there's a lot more benefit in moving away from the mercury products for the reasons that all of you have explained to us, so industry will also have to be in line. I know that they will also raise issues about the cost. We'll have to deal with that. We'll have to. Oh, there's one last one. I thought this was the last one. I was doing closing remarks. Okay. I'm also told that we don't have a presentation from source. It wasn't sent through. It should have been sent through, Minier.
I apologize for that, Mr. Chair. Make sure next time it will be on time.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, honorable members. I'm Lembo Martin from the SA Weather Service, and I will quickly just give a presentation on the mercury monitoring program that is operational at the South African Weather Service. I'm quickly just going to focus on the following points. What is the global atmosphere watch? History of the Cape Horn mercury program, some results, the involvement of the program in international modeling studies, and some conclusions. We are
unit in the research department of SOARS called the Global Atmosphere Watch Unit. We're stationed at Stellenbosch, and our lab is at Cape Point. The Cape Point Global Atmosphere Watch Station is part of a network of WMO stations globally. There's about 31 of these stations, and the reason for that station is basically is to monitor background concentrations of greenhouse gases. As you can see from the map, all of the 31 stations is very remote. So the station is ideally located, as they say, in real estate. There's three things: location, location, location. So for a GOES station, the location is very important, that when we monitor certain gases, we don't want to see influence from the city. So that's why we're very remote. We are located at the most southwestern tip of the African continent. So most of the air masses that move over the station, which we detect, comes from the ocean. So we classify that as clean air. In other words, there's no pollution in it. In winter time, the situation changes a bit. We can see the influence from the city of Cape Town, and then we do have some pollution that we can detect. Just a short background, the trace gases that we monitor at the station, we do CO2 since 1992. We monitor methane, N2O, all the greenhouse gases, carbon monoxide, ozone, SF6, and even radon. And then we also monitor halo and fluorocarbons since 1979. And then what I'm going to talk about next, we've been monitoring atmospheric mercury since 1995. And then as a weather station, we also monitor the normal MET parameters like wind pressure, temperature, rain, and all that other parameters. The Cape Point site started in 1978, and our first measurement that we took there was for CO. That is the time series of the Cape Point series for carbon monoxide. And we have the longest data set in the southern hemisphere for carbon monoxide, which started in 1978. That instrument was donated from Germany, and it gave us a life service of about 36 years. So if a car can give you a life service of 36 years, it would be very impressive. But we were very fortunate to have this time series from this instrument for so long. Then I just want to highlight this, excuse me, we also monitor CFCs as part of the Montreal Protocol that was implemented in 1989. We can actually see the effect, the benefit of the Montreal Protocol in the data. As you can see from the graphs, the black one and the red one, that the concentrations of CFCs went down because of the implementation of the Montreal Protocol. And since 1996, all CFCs has been banned. And in our data, we can pick up these trends because, like I said, we are background stations, so we monitor the background concentration. Just to take you away from here, that is where we spend most of our